your yogis don't go into politics.
I want a black guy too. I was hitting my eye with a baseball that night.
People were just moving to Austin. Like, everyone goes, we go.
I'm scared of this.
People calling us white supremacists.
Life is too important to take seriously. Living dangerously is paradoxically the safest thing. There came a day when the risk to remain tight in the bud became greater than the risk it took to blossom.
Creating cosmos out of chaos.
I think it's like growing spurt times. Like, he'll just sleep, like, and we'll be like, oh, we can do some yoga this morning.
Yeah,
we can do something.
I forgot to do a yoga practice this morning, which isn't always a thing in the mornings. It's like, wow.
But it's trickier at home, hey? Like just the balance of
I love being home because my little guy, my lady, they're everything to me. Mm-hmm. But logistically, it's easier when I'm traveling for comedy shows. I just kind of like, I get to control all the variables.
Yeah, of course.
I used to be in a band, and when we played hometown shows, it was a nightmare. It was the best because it's such a celebration, but there's always so many people to take care of. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know if you get that too.
I started ignoring my friends. I did a weekend of shows here in Austin maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
And I was recording my comedy special during that weekend. And it's like, I decided I'm just going to be selfish. I wasn't even reaching out to friends like, hey, do you want to come to my show? Because then there's the logistics. Well, let me connect you to this person for tickets. Not big things, but when you multiply that out over a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. So if friends would reach out, it's like, yeah, cool. Like, let me connect you to this person. But otherwise, I just kind of selfishly flew under the radar to avoid some of that.
Yeah. And then the presence, too. I'd always find that it was like, kind of felt obligated to spend a certain amount of time, like their guests.
Of course.
And then it's like, how many guests can I host tonight and do everything? You know, like, it was just I used to leave and just be like, best night ever. But Jesus Christ. You know, like, was there always this duality to the hometown nights? So it was really crazy, actually.
It's a great problem to have.
Yeah, exactly.
But relative
to
the situation, it's got some stresses to it.
That's really interesting.
Austin has been your home, like, for a while, or are you from here originally?
No, we moved here about 4.5 years ago. Okay. And about 3 months ago, we moved technically outside of Austin out to Dripping Springs. So now we're on a ranch, just more space, nature, animals around.
Wow.
But still technically Austin, sort of.
Is that where you did your last video?
Probably.
On YouTube? It was like this beautiful.
The conservative yogis?
The conservative yogis,
That was at a ranch,
I loved your outfit, JP.
Oh, thank you. I was debating between like just those cut off jean shorts or like leopard yoga pants, then jean shorts over it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was all about the quads.
Thank you. Thank you for getting the true message in the video.
It hit me right there. It was very inspiring, actually. It's all about the quads. That's so good.
That's what my work's about, the quads.
It's funny, actually. For a while, we thought you were in Costa Rica because remember we were at Envision 2018, and I think we were there at the same time.
We were in Dominical after.
For Envision Festival.
Yeah, we've been there Envision for 2018.
Yeah, we saw you lunch next to you at the place next to the Mama Toucan factory, I don't know, in Dominical.
Yeah.
And I didn't know a lot of your work at that time, but I loved the yogi photo video, how to do it. Like, it was an early one, I think. And I was like, it's the red haired comedian guy. And so I was like, and then everyone, you know, people like, oh, he lives here. And there's all these like murmurs about, did you live in Costa Rica at that time? Or
I didn't technically live there, but my wife still technically live there. Like, we met January 2017, so about a year before that. Right. And we kind of hit it off hot and heavy. So I would go down to Costa Rica for anywhere from a week to a month. I think maybe 3 months was my longest stint. Yeah. And then, you know, when our schedules were like the other way, she'd come up to the States. So we were just doing back and forth for, I don't know what it was, probably about a year. And then I had a speaking gig in Austin and she was able to come with me. And we left the 2 days here just looking at each other saying like, shit, should we move to Austin?
Wow.
Because we were engaged and we knew like, hey, we want to like not just flip flop back and forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, she loves Costa Rican as much as I love it as well. Just for my work, it's not easy to do what I do there.
Nothing.
Flying in and out all the time.
Nothing's easy in Costa Rica.
It's not.
The jungle is definitely its own beast to capture.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There's a lot of adversities life throws at you.
The simplest things.
Yeah.
The simplest things become so difficult.
Even for us, like, I mean, because we spend about 6 months of the year in Nosara, and it's like we go through so much gear, so many laptops, because the humidity just like it kills everything, right? So you're really having to like just like learn acceptance and patience with the fact that like that's just the beauty of living in the jungle, you know, it really challenges you in many ways.
Yeah, you either resist it and you suffer, or you learn to accept it.
It chews you up fast.
Like, I don't think I ever learned to accept it. I'm gonna be frustrated. This feels better.
That's amazing.
I've been feeling that here in Austin, that there's a sort of reintegration back to, like, if you would go want to go live in New York or something like that after Costa Rica, you need a stop here.
I would think going right from Costa Rica to New York would be,
oh my god,
or like Paris, yeah.
But yeah, this would be a reintegration, good middle ground. Yeah, and the community of people here, it's very conscious. So not to say New York's not, but New York's not.
But New York's not. we can just say that straight.
Yeah. So I'd imagine it's like decompressing from, like, if you're scuba diving 100 feet down, like, you can't just go right to the surface.
Austin's the 50 foot.
Yeah.
Sort of, for sure. That makes sense. And so, Austin, for you here, where were you before?
I lived in Charleston, South Carolina
for
4 years before Austin. A previous relationship took me out there.
Yeah.
And it ended, and it was like, I like it here. Never felt like this is home forever.
Yeah.
It was a great place and great people. And before Charleston, I lived in San Diego for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And then before that, I was originally from a small town in Ohio called Bowling Green.
Wow. Okay.
I've kind of flip-flopped.
Ohio all boy, hey?
Yeah.
To San Diego. That's interesting. We did Charleston on a tour years ago.
Yeah.
We loved it there.
In 2017, actually.
We did like a tour. Event in like a park right downtown. It was beautiful.
It's a very beautiful spot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a little unnerved. The 4 years I lived there, I had to evacuate my house twice because of incoming hurricanes.
Mm.
And luckily, like, nothing was devastating, but there was like tree knocked down, but it just that sort of root chakra instability of like safety, security, like the home actually isn't offering safety, security because it's in such a hurricane belt.
Right. So, I don't think I often wonder about people that continue to live in those spaces. Cause for me, like, I don't think, like what you're saying, I relate to, I don't think I could handle the idea of like at any minute, it's like head for the hills. Like,
it's
buckle down and pray. Like, hey, those are both terrible options for me. I don't know.
And a lot of the people that live there for a while, they just stop evacuating because there's more false alarms than there are catastrophes. But it's like, well, the catastrophes can happen, and they just kind of like, nah, I'm staying put.
Right. It's like, it's interesting. It's the whole like, I'm in my home. This is where I am. Yeah. I don't know if I've gotten to that place of attachment to any home yet. Maybe because we moved so much.
Yeah, we move a lot, but that's crazy. So you went to Austin, and then that's kind of when COVID happened, right? Like right before.
We were here for probably 2 years,
and then
COVID happened.
So you're an original, like, migrant to Austin.
Yeah.
Kind of like, in that regard.
It was already trendy, and people moving to Austin were getting like a bad rap because a lot of people were flooding here before COVID.
Yeah.
And then after COVID, of course, tons more. So I got in on like the pre-COVID Austin visa,
if you will.
So I don't get as bad of a rap, I guess.
Well, that's funny because we met a lot of people even in the last like week and a half that we've been here. And so many of like, we moved to COVID. Moved to Austin because, you know, I was in California and COVID happened. So it's like, and everybody was doing it. So I did it too.
Everyone was doing it.
Like this migration. We're like, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like people were just so, they're like, yep, everyone goes, we go.
Yeah, tons of people were doing it. And then I think two key people who are incredibly influential when Joe Rogan and Elon Musk moved here, because obviously they're some of the most famous people in the world, very influential. So if whatever, like 11 or 13 million are listening to each Rogan podcast and 100 million follow Elon on Twitter and they're saying, hey, I'm moving to Austin. Mm-hmm. That, of course, that impacts a lot of people's decision-making. Yeah.
Well, and there's real decisions in their choices, which is interesting too. Like, it's not just like, oh, I love the trees or the nature. Like, there's like actual, like a reason, like whether it's for tax reasons or just policy or politics or whatever it is. It just like, just seeing people like that do it, I think is really interesting because it raises sort of an awareness. Like, what do they know that I don't know?
Right.
And so people investigate.
You look into it.
Which is fascinating to me because I think like that, especially in the last few years to us, is something that we feel is really important for people to start to do. Yeah. Just look at other people's behavior and say, well, how am I behaving in relation to that behavior and why am I making those decisions?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because speaking of moving to Austin, like we watched, you know, your content during that time, not the Austin move, but the COVID time, take a shift. And to us from the outside, as I said earlier, like the red hair comedian that does the funny yoga videos, what you started to speak about and intelligently make commentary towards, it was really admirable from our end. Mm-hmm. And I think not just because of the consciousness in you that I think became very prevalent to us, but it was also the fact in a time when speaking in that kind of way can bring so much backlash.
Yeah.
So when you made that shift, like, how did that come for you? Like, what made you want to take that step forward?
Yeah. So, you know, when COVID happened, restrictions, and it's like, restrictions are happening. I was questioning them right off the bat, even when it looked like, hey, they're saying this new virus, it could just be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. And that's before we find out, like, yeah, it's a real thing, but it's more on par with the flu with regard to the actual results of it. But even from the onset of the restrictions, I was thinking, you know, like, I'm scared of this.
Yeah.
But we're in the U.S., and I do question, is it constitutional to require people to shut their businesses down? So I was questioning the freedom aspect right off the bat, and then freedoms start getting taken away for our protection.
Yeah.
And I didn't know freedom was my number one value until they start getting chipped away, mm-hmm. kind of like a fish doesn't know it's swimming in water until you take it out of the water.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm not the most educated person, but I know about history a little bit. So you recognize patterns in history, and a beautiful part about pattern recognition is you can see where you're at, what pattern is there, without having to wait 10 years for mm-hmm. the full thing to play out. And I looked at patterns throughout history. I'm like, oh, we're in a pattern that doesn't end well if we allow it. And doesn't mean it will end well, but it's a pattern that could end really negatively based on what humans have done before. But of course, I'd pay attention to my own thinking and be like, oh, well, that could never happen here.
Yeah.
And then I started realizing, well, they all say that. Yeah. It's a very arrogant thing for me to say. And I also realized, like, well, that's probably the mindset that allows bad things to happen, to deny that they could happen. Mm-hmm. So I start recognizing freedom's important to me, and in the work, even when I was doing like all the yoga stuff, conscious community stuff, the work was always about calling out lies and corruption, typically in the spiritual stuff, from our own egos. How we'd be egotistical but hide it in noble looking hiding spots so we can pretend we're above it. So I start doing that more at a social level with what was going on with the mandates and stuff from the authority figures. And once I started doing that, I realized how big of a deal it is, because I saw backlash. And I was like, well, why are y'all people getting upset about this? I'm like advocating for freedom, calling out what looks like bad behavior, calling out hypocrisies. And that's when I realized I had a decision. Freedom's now a political issue, which is mind-boggling in America. So the decision is, do I keep talking about what my heart is calling me to talk about and risk losing audience, alienating people, getting people mad at me, getting deplatformed?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I play it safe
yeah.
and talk about things that are vanilla and avoid my heart's calling? But I just realized that there's no decision here. Mm-hmm. I know my result, and or I know where my heart's at, and I realized like I'd rather risk losing everything, the online following, all the things mm-hmm. I've built up. I'd rather risk losing that in the name of being true to my truth. And then it turns out it's been the best thing I've ever done for business. The following grew exponentially, and I realized like, oh, what I'm voicing actually represents the voice and thinking for a lot of people that don't feel they have a voice to represent them through traditional media. And not that I like, dude, let's stand for freedom. It's a good business move. I'm not that smart totally. To like see that that would be wise. But seeing our freedoms eroded away was the deciding factor of like, oh, that's why I'm doing this mm-hmm. shift with my content. And then I'll just footnote that. The other piece of motivation is April 7th, 2020 is the day I found out my wife was pregnant with our little boy. Y'all have a beautiful little one. So, you know, when God entrusts you to steward this soul into this incarnation and like, yeah, like this physical plane, mm-hmm. it's not the end all be all, but this is such a sacred experience to be gifted this lifetime. Taking that responsibility of my son's soul meant so much to me. And y'all know you'll do anything to yeah. protect and preserve that little one's mm-hmm. life. And part of that means protecting their future. Mm-hmm. So I knew with my son coming into this world, there's a conversation I'm not willing to have with them where I have to explain two things. Number one, what freedom was. And number two, why his father didn't do anything about it when he had a chance. Mm-hmm. So knowing my son deserves to swim in his birthright of freedom, because to me, freedom is God's way. Fear, evil, for me, that's constriction, that's mm-hmm. control. That's the opposite of freedom. To me, God, it's expansion, it's freedom. So knowing the importance of my son, I wanted to do my small little part to contribute to the world that he deserves to live in. So that made it so I looked at the situation of, dude, it's kind of, I could play it safe mm-hmm. or I could play it dangerously. And I've learned it's kind of a paradox where now we're living in a time, I think it's where our warrior spirit is being called. So I believe we're living in a time where playing it safe is the most dangerous thing we could do. Mm-hmm. But living dangerously, which I think is where our hearts usually guide us to go, living dangerously is paradoxically the safest thing we could do
right.
because we just have to ask the question, what if we don't follow the call?
Mm-hmm.
What then? And in my opinion, that's where the real danger comes that's from.
Yeah. Way worse, for sure.
Wow.
And so that conscious decision to move forward, I mean, I'm not aware of how it went. Was it very turbulent as you shifted? Like you said, there was backlash.
There was backlash, but turbulence is in the eye of the beholder.
Right.
You know, there were, you know, like plenty of comments. I mean, mm-hmm. overwhelming support. I could look at the analytics yeah. on a YouTube video and see like, well, it's 99% like versus dislike ratio. Mm-hmm. So overwhelming support, but that 1% of unsupportive comments and
yeah.
stuff, there's backlash there. I'm sure I lost some followers. I didn't really notice because I was gaining yeah. them at a mm-hmm. far more rapid rate.
But what the negativity of that little bit, like I've heard, actually I saw a really great clip about like Joe Rogan and Peterson talking about never reading the comments
yeah.
because like everyone can say such beautiful things. And we've been in situations too, where all of a sudden like five comments and it just
especially
somehow
when you're very sensitive, like for me, I can't read yeah. negative comments because it impacts me on like a physical plane that I just choose to step away from.
You're
that.
Very good at removing.
I don't need to, yeah. but some people are much more stronger in just taking it in because I don't know. How was it for yeah. you to?
Well, I'm sort of a hybrid of you. Okay. I don't read the comments. I mean, if I post a video, I like to like maybe go on for a few comments and just reply
yeah, yeah.
For, you know, earnest spirited comments.
Totally. Yeah.
But I don't go looking at negative comments because I know there's no upside. There's only the risk of me getting attached to it. Also, if you like read for the positive comments, you're polarized. You're right. going to be just as attached to the negative ones. So I don't go looking at the comments. But when I do hear stuff like mm-hmm. a friend sends me, hey, someone wrote a smear article about you. I genuinely don't care. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I say that from a place of indifference. I say that from a place of like, I just, it doesn't register. My pulse doesn't elevate one bit. But wow. I can say that as a 41-year-old man now. Rewind 10 years ago, mm-hmm. well, that would have mattered to me.
Right.
I like to call myself a recovering approval addict where, you know, I've had some life experiences. I have a son now. I had a son on the way at the time. So I had some perspective. And after yeah. a couple decades of self-growth, I'd been able to free myself from the center of gravity of my mind and efforts just trying to accumulate the currency of approval, because mm-hmm. I realized like it's actually a pretty worthless currency.
Yeah.
It gets you a dopamine mm-hmm. hit. It doesn't fulfill you.
Mm-hmm.
So having tried to fulfill myself with approval for many years, experiencing both the positive and negative consequences, I think that helped cleanse me of negative stuff said or written about me, attaching to me. It's kind of right. more water off a duck's back.
Yeah. Wow. But also something that really connects with me when you said like how you gained a lot of followers because people, you know, were searching for something to connect to, because like in the society and right now with all the censorship, like you're punished for even speaking out, and not just if you're have a public platform, but even within your friends and family.
Yeah.
Like we've experienced it and we've seen it, like there is this division even between family members and communities, because you choose, you know, to see it one way and they see it the other way, and somehow now we're going to be completely severing all of these, you know, beautiful connections and memories and friendships that we've built. And so I think what a lot of people that experienced that, I'm sure we weren't the only ones that experienced it.
It would be fun if you were the only ones. Like, hey, you guys are screwed up. What yeah. is wrong with you? Right.
Sorry, you're wrong. No, but now, you know, they can at least go online and see videos that you post of like, wow, I'm not the only one that feels this way.
Mm.
And then they see others kind of gathering in this community. So it did provide a community for people to reach out to and have that support and guidance. Because even for us, like we left a comment in one of your videos, which was so funny, because we said, you know, what did we say? It was like, you know, the world is screwed up when we're going to your videos, like especially the ones, the newscaster yeah. ones that you do, which provide all this information when we watch JP Sears's videos instead of like the news.
Yeah,
you know?
That's super screwed up.
Yeah.
Just so
yeah.
fucked up, man. Like, and I remember that was at a time especially where we were still trying to make so much sense. I think we got out of that weird questioning, is this going to be a zombie apocalypse
yeah,
moment
yeah, totally.
Of the pandemic? Yeah. And then trying to make sense of this narrative that was just coming at from all sides.
And didn't make sense
and
a lot of the times.
And the logic like, was just yeah. like, seemed to be sucked out of it. And then we like, and that's when we really felt this like kinship to your energy and just
yeah.
like the message and being like, and then it hit us. We're like, holy fuck, this is our, not our main source, but our source of oxygen out of all of this confusion, to just be like, someone's questioning it. And it, and it's, I think questioning is the healthiest thing in the world.
Yes, and putting it out there, which is so admirable, like you faced it, you know, like no matter how much fear of censorship and even deplatforming, which I'm sure for a creator like yourself, like that's a big part of your
True.
Livelihood, right? Like your YouTube channel, that's your community. Like to face that risk, like, wow, that's amazing. Like,
yeah, and it becomes too dangerous not to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, what is it, the Anais Nin quote. I don't even know if I say his or her name right. But the quote, so wise, there came a day when the risk to remain tight in the bud became greater than the risk it took to blossom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all get there in our own mind. What? And whether it's about what's going on socially speaking, like, okay, now I'll actually speak and live my truth,
mm-hmm.
or it's in our own other parts of the hero journey of our life, we avoid things. Part of human nature. It's not our best self, but
yeah.
we all do it.
For sure.
And we avoid it because it seems safer not to. But then eventually the negative consequences of avoidance, which is oftentimes avoiding being our true self, mm-hmm. we start to realize, oh, it's just way more dangerous to continue avoiding. So then fear kind of becomes a good motivator. It's like too scary to keep doing yeah. what I'm doing. It's scarier. It's also scary to change, but now changing is slightly less scary than mm-hmm. staying the same.
Right. And on each side of that, you're going to suffer in a different way.
Exactly.
And so why not choose the one that you can actually express something and be your authentic self and embrace that? And I think it's so important, I think, for people to think about that, because like not doing anything, being the silent observer, like, you know, like it's almost consent in a way, and you're going to suffer because inside, you know, and like you say, down the line, there could be even bigger repercussions, whether it's internally with your own ego, in your own life, or socially, but to step out and be a part of it. When you said those words about telling your son, like being like the father, like why I did something, or not having to tell the story of why I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's honestly
that
like
hits
it, on a large social level, or just on a situational level, or anything. I think we can all go through so much suffering when we don't express what is in our heart, what is in our truth. And there's so much to be learned from that on like the micro to the macro. Yeah. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible, actually.
Yeah. Did you face censorship on any platforms? Like, did they actually take certain things away from you?
Yeah. In fact, just yesterday, I was uploading a video to my second YouTube channel, JP Reacts. As soon as it was uploaded, they said, we're deleting your video. You have a warning.
Was it ambiguous? Why was the reasoning there?
They aren't specific.
No,
just violated community guidelines.
Right, of course.
But so with censorship, I haven't been deplatformed, which is great. I want to stay on YouTube because it's a way to connect mm-hmm. with great people who want to connect with me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's been various videos deleted along the way. Certainly a lot of demonetization. But most of the censorship I face, like I inflict on myself. It's like, all right, I'm putting a video out on a platform that is heavily censored. So instead of just definitely getting kicked off, I censor the videos as I'm writing them because, you know, of course. I'm talking about stuff that's highly censorable. So I have to ask myself, all right, what metaphors and analogies can I use to say what I want to say without saying it literally? And then also using the language of satire, I think helps because if you take away the soul of satire, the tonality, the body language, and you just read the words, you're like, well, he's toeing the line of the narrative. This is good. So I think part of the AI isn't really hip to satire at this point anyway. So the censorship, it's on my mind, and the risk of being deplatformed, I'm absolutely willing to take that risk while being intelligent. Some people I know, it's almost like they intentionally get deplatformed. And I think that has merit for some people. That's a hill that they're metaphorically willing to die on. Mm-hmm. And it proves a point. Mm-hmm. It raises awareness. But that's not really my hill to die on.
Yeah. No, I think using the tool of satire and laughter and comedy to give deep social commentary about the absurdities of what is going on in this day and age, it's such a beautiful art, and like please don't die on the hill. It keeps us so happy. It keeps us laughing.
Well, it brings a little bit of lightness to a situation that is dark, you know, and that's scary and just like, oh my God, but at least you can kind of laugh about it and like just put your head on.
And then there's always that moment of like, oh yeah, I'm laughing and it's real. And then then there's that after current. I remember Heidi, we had that moment once watching one of the newscaster videos in Costa Rica.
Yeah, it's heavy in a way.
It is heavy.
It is heavy. It's good that we can laugh, but at the same time, it's like, okay, swallow.
Well, I think with what's going on in our world, it's probably always been in our world. It's just like not hiding anymore.
Yeah.
There's certainly a lot of heaviness to acknowledge, and we can all choose our own adventure. Like wake up, just to use a old analogy, wake up to the Matrix or stay asleep. Mm-hmm. We can really choose. And for those of us doing our best to wake up, we realize waking up is hard to do. Mm-hmm. There's pain that comes with it. Pain that happens staying asleep. And I would argue that's actually more pain. Mm-hmm. You just get to be in denial of it more. So given there's hard, stressful realities to digest and assimilate. That to me is just irrefutable. But how do we navigate our lives with that? I know some people who they'll take in all the information available and their quality of life is crap. Mm-hmm. They get stressed out. They're full of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then I know other people who take in the same information, what's going on in the world, what's happening below the surface. And they're happy, joyful people. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's important to laugh at what's going on. Right. Take it seriously, for sure. And also take it humorously. Mm-hmm. Oscar Wilde once said, life is too important to take seriously.
I love that.
And then I also have to remind myself, we're here, whatever. I'm looking at Anthony Fauci and he's just as much me at a spiritual level as I am. He's mm-hmm. the part of me that maybe forgets even more where he came from. Right. So I have to remind myself of the spiritual context that we live in, remind myself to laugh at what's going on. But then I also find there's a common denominator that is absent or present between people who are trying to wake up, but the more they wake up, the more they suffer, the more mm-hmm. pessimistic yes. they get. It's like, now I'm not enjoying life anymore. Let me find out more information so I can mm-hmm. enjoy it less. Versus people waking up, but living a great life. Mm-hmm. And to me, that one of the most important common denominators is them doing something with the information they take in, mm-hmm. having an outlet. Wow. It, for me, my outlet for peace of mind, turning the anxiety into action is largely my content. Mm-hmm. It's not everybody's path. Sometimes it's like, all right, I'm going to empower myself with this information and make some different choices here and there. Or mm-hmm. I'll show up in conversations differently. I'll be more honest, or I'll start a blog, or whatever a person's outlet of action is. To me, that is so essential for peace of mind, because if you take in a lot of the here's what's really going on, just one article, it is very healthy to feel anxiety and stress. Right. You're a sociopath if you don't. We have a nervous system, totally. emotions, they're meant for something. You're meant to feel afraid when you're seeing something scary.
Yeah.
So we have that, but that anxiety, it just accumulates if we don't have an outlet. Mm-hmm. So now we're 2.5 years into this mm-hmm. accumulation. But if people take in, I feel anxious and stressed, but then that energy gets transmuted as fuel into positive contribution to their life and the lives of their family and the world around them. Now that anxiety is actually fueling a very positive momentum in that person's mm-hmm. life, and they get to have much more peace of mind and happiness. I have space for happiness mm-hmm. because all of my internal real estate isn't taking up by this anxiety that I've accumulated mm-hmm. and haven't vented. It's kind of like, you just imagine for the past 2.5 years, all the meals you've eaten, now just imagine you never took a shit in the past 2.5 years. That's what people are doing to themselves. But you got to take a shit. You got to have an outlet for, apply what we learn into a purpose. Mm-hmm. Whatever that looks like for a person, I think is essential for the times we live in. If you want to have a happy life and feel that life truly is a blessing in spite of the curses going on. And the curses carry blessings because they make us stronger if we choose to apply ourselves.
I love that. It's where art comes in, right? Because I heard somewhere this thing that we've replaced in conscious community, meaning, a pleasure with meaning. And then you're so in the meaning, but you're not making art out of it. So I think that really resonated what you just said.
I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Just ask ourselves, how can I make art out of this?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, because an artist feels so deeply that they have to do something with it.
Right.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I find the pandemic has given a lot of people is a way to really reevaluate their life. but also find a different outlet. You know, some people have moved into like the country or out of the cities, or some people have, you know, decided to mm-hmm. to do something they've always wanted to do, but they didn't have time for it, whatever, right? So I think it's wonderful to also look at an issue, a problem, a pandemic and all these things, and kind of look at it from a different perspective. Be like, well, it did bring us some good. Also, even like, look at what you've done, right? Like, you've opened up this community to even have a deeper trust in you because you're so courageous to stand up in front of it. The thing that for me it's always a struggle is it's like when and this is what I've noticed a lot with even friends, when you talk about some of these like things that are makes total sense to you, like the news articles, you're like, but you know,
so you find your outlet, right? Yeah, as you find it.
Yeah, no, as you find it, but also when you start to speak about a certain thing and they label you as a conspiracy theorist or like, oh, well, you're just falling into the trap of conspiracy theory. Because if you question anything, you're automatically in that category. You're not trying to open your mind and just to look at everything. They're just continuously labeling you into one side.
Looks like they built a structure to alienate you.
Yeah, and that still happens.
Oh my God,
like,
yeah.
Happening.
I actually read something funny on your Wikipedia, if you don't mind me reading it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's true.
Yeah.
Well, it's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, it has to be true.
Like, what is science communicator Jonathan Jerry of the Office for Science and Society, McGill University, described Sears as part of the conspirituality trend, combining conspiracy theory and New Age spirituality.
Conspirituality.
That's a new word.
That's a new word.
Spirituality trend. I like that.
Yeah, learned that thanks to you.
That's well, it's and he's from science, so we should be actually just taking that without a thought, I think. He's the
science says so.
Science says so. There we go. Oh my God.
But I'm sure that's probably been a lot of the kind of backlash you've received as well, right? Like from people saying you're a conspiracy theorist.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't, at this point, I don't believe in reality anymore because the conspiracy theories are just statistically way more accurate at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's coming that way.
And to me, we know how the term conspiracy theory is used now. Like, yes, there's some lunatic conspiracy theories that I think are just like, dude, I don't know how many brain cells you're missing. And then there's what are labeled conspiracy theories that are like, oh, we have evidence that's quite true. So we know how people use the term conspiracy theory. It's the same term that, or the same way that unfortunately terms like you're a racist, you're homophobic, transphobic, misogynist, it's just a playbook of smears in order to protect oneself against critically analyzing someone else's point of view. I find these terms, they're not logically applied most of the time. They're emotionally applied. Like there's an emotional reactivity that says, oh, conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And then we have a divided consciousness happening. But if there's like, to me, an open mind says, oh, you're saying something I didn't know. Mm-hmm. You're saying something that I feel objections about. Let me understand your point of view more. Doesn't mean I'll agree. I might think you're even crazier after you explain it more. But that's a connective consciousness where we can actually connect in spite of agreement or disagreement. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens when people can access their intelligence in any given moment. But when we're just like, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, well, you're a crazy leftist,
it's a reaction. Yeah, it's like a immediate reaction to anything that they actually haven't digested properly.
Absolutely. Right? It shuts down connection, it divides, and leaves one feeling more justified in their perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like we've talked about this a few times in our podcast, but the one time we really saw this in our community is when we supported a protest, a movement that was happening for freedom. And we really on social media just said, you know what, we support the idea of that we should mandate freedom, and that people should have the choice to choose whatever they want to do. That was it. Like we kept it positive. We weren't going too far to each side. And even just from something very, very middle ground, we saw people calling us white supremacists.
Oh my God.
Like they went so far to a point, I remember like it affected me emotionally. Obviously I'm a very receptive person. And I was just so confused how people could take something so simple and turn it into so dark. to be like, because I say support a protest that is protesting about, you know, especially we're in Canada originally, so there's a lot of craziness happens there.
Yeah.
And because there were certain people that went to these protests that, let's just say, could have been even placed by the government, who knows, that waved a Nazi flag or something.
I saw it. From what I understand, they were placed there.
Yeah. They were actually placed
and
there.
Right away, but
it's a conspiracy, well, but I literally, they proved it. Yeah.
And then the media obviously reports that, and then the people that are just consuming that one source of media all of a sudden just jump to this conclusion that this was a white supremacy thing. Yeah. And as soon as you stand up and say, I support the movement that's happening, all of a sudden they just put you in this bucket without actually thinking about what you're saying, reading even what you're describing in your social media post, and just labeling you like that. And you're like, whoa, that was harsh and very drastic to put somebody in a bucket that they're supporting something so different. You know what I mean? Like, it breaks my brain.
And I'm curious how it's been for you. That's obviously a great example. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, how it's been for you, because I know the call it like yoga community, new age community, it seems to lean more towards, hey, we support the narrative. I know so many people who like, no, I'm independently thinking on this. Mm-hmm. And I know some people in those communities who are closeted, like JP, like, these people are crazy. I'm not really saying what I really think, because they're going to excommunicate me. So whether it's good, bad, or in the middle, I'm curious what y'all's experience has been on the whole.
It's interesting. I find it's in the circles. I mean, I guess in Nisara is where we spend a lot of time socially. And socially, it seems like, I think a lot of people that left Nisara sort of lead in the independent thought sort of reign of things. But then you also get some situations which have been really beautiful. Like, you'll be all having a dinner and a conversation will come up and you'll speak your truth. You know, we were talking, I think, about mandates of vaccinations, and, you know, everybody talks and talks and talks. And then you realize there's two people from Colorado at the table and they haven't said a word.
Yeah.
But what's beautiful about that is that we find the space, upon acknowledging that, to actually discuss things through and to share food and to have that conversation and have an open space for it. Yeah. And I think that is all I've ever asked and looked for, because anything I think, I love the idea of tomorrow, I'd love to rethink it again and test it again and hear something new and run it through another round of tests again, and like to constantly allow the space to let others evolve what I think.
Yeah.
That's being human. Like, we're growing every day. We should be evolving and trying to be better and more self-aware and more smart. But like digging your heels in at a dinner and turning that into, you know, warfare is a terrible, terrible
but
thought.
But we have seen but that then, like on our larger scale.
Then when you get online.
Online community, it's very, very divisive. And it's crazy. And again, another thing that breaks my brain a lot, because I'm like, well, this is a yoga community. Yoga is about unity. It's about like really embracing oneness of everything and being open and compassionate to everybody. And I see like this whole problem and situation, all of us are just finding a way to feel safe, right? Like, we're all just looking to feel safe. And okay, if I want to do this because it makes me feel safe, okay, then do it. I don't want to do it because it doesn't make me feel safe, then don't do it. You know, it's like we have the right to do that. And yoga is about accepting one another and loving each other for that. But all I've seen from the online community is divide. As soon as you even speak on the subject, right away they're like, you're yogis, don't go into politics. How is freedom like, politics? How are we even saying anything to, like, we never
following your own heart,
exactly,
your own
thing.
How's that politics?
Like, right,
and again, I'm just like, it's been a really confusing time, like, for us, but personally, just to see how all of this is happening. But at the same time, you're also seeing people, you know, try to bring it into one. It's like when the discussions and the arguments began on certain platforms, like, people are standing up for
and to,
freedom.
To give it due respect to, like, the dumpster fire of comments that this erupted, this specific situation, there was people on both sides that were just like, just viscerally, like, spewing just like fire at each other.
Yeah.
And both sides are just whale side. Like, both, like, you know what? Like, that's not yoga either.
Exactly.
If this is what you're trying to say, like, it is about listening. Like, it's just about and considering, and then standing your truth and doing whatever comes at you and dealing with it, whatever comes at you, while you hold that space and let other people's truths be their truths. Yeah. We don't have to like agree, but at least we can agree to, this sounds so cheesy, disagree. Oh my God, I said that. I just said that.
It plays. And I appreciate the distinction you alluded to. You know, people who are behaving hysterical on either side, yeah. I think we all benefit by recognizing when someone hysterical on, you know, side B, they agree with us, but they're acting hysterical. That's just as divisive and fear-based as the person acting hysterical on the other side who has different beliefs than us. And I think we can all do our best to improve humanity by calling our brothers and sisters and ourselves up and out of that. Like, hey, we agree with each other. Great. Yeah. But let's take a look at how you're treating other people and catch ourselves when we're doing it. I'm curious, how long have y'all been in the yoga, like self-realization trajectory in your lives?
In our lives, not online, for 10 years. Yeah.
I found like so many of the spiritual principles and teachings, they always like, wow, that resonates. This is so beneficial. Mm-hmm. And I'd get real benefit in my personal life and my choices and how I navigate things. But I look back, it's like, oh, we were in the training field for many years. We were learning things and applying them when it was really easy to apply them. But now I think the past couple of years, there's no more bleachers in life. It's all arena floor. It's the game time. Yeah. It's not the practice room. And it's easy to apply the spiritual principles when it's easy to apply. Mm-hmm. But guess what? When we need them most, that's when it's the hardest to apply them. I think our smaller self, our ego, our emotional reactivity wants to make us feel safe. Therefore, it tries to take the locus of our consciousness over. But I think we're all being called to like, hey, this is the time to apply what we've learned. This is the game. And we can see examples in our own lives and our communities of people succeeding and failing at different times where we know, like, love and accept each other. Cool. Do we do that just when we agree with people or do we not? Yeah. Get your truth from within. Cool. Are you doing that even when you've got the news on all the time? I think this is a very special time we live in, but I think all of our training, it's for this time.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful.
That is beautiful.
And because as you're saying, I mean, the tipping point is here and it has to fall one way or another. And whether or not I think there's also this idea of like, with the alienation that Juliana was talking about earlier, I think there's also an element of feeling like you can't have an effect. And that can be I think those two pieces are things that really hold people in the bleachers.
Yeah.
The idea of doing it because at the end of the day, you want to be able to say, at least I tried, is a really beautiful thing. Like I stood on I died on my feet, not on my knees. Like I think that's a very strong idea that we all have the power to embrace. And a lot of people, I think they undervalue the idea of what it means to just be like, well, I did everything I could. I spoke my heart. Mm-hmm. I spoke my mind. I expressed myself. And sure, I didn't change the world, but maybe I contributed to some positive change.
Yeah.
And that it's interesting. It's like we do a lot of work with animal sanctuaries. And this one woman in Thailand, Lek, she said this one stunning thing to me because she saves hundreds and hundreds of elephants and everyone thinks it's so amazing because it's like, oh, look at all these elephants you saved. But it breaks her heart still, she says, because she can't save them all.
Mm.
And so I think you asked her like, well, how do you cope with that? Because coping for all of us, like we are all only affecting little drops, right? And I think it was really stunning. She said, I can't save all of them. I can't change the world, but I can save and change that one life.
Yeah.
And so when you don't know the ripples you're creating, I think the trust in that the ripples are there and just knowing that you're making them can be a really empowering thing that a lot of people overlook.
Yeah.
I agree. And I would even, and I'm going to say this to myself too. I'm not just trying to like talk to the theys.
No,
yeah,
there.
Totally.
I think it's a very egotistical thing for us to say, I can't make a difference. That is so delusional. I think it's the ego using a very egotistical way to try to play it safe. Mm-hmm. And it's scary for people to try to make a difference and then not recognize that they made a difference. And then mm-hmm. I think it's sometimes even scarier to try to make a difference and you do make a difference. Mm-hmm. It just activates self-responsibility and we realize, oh shit, my life has a lot of meaning. Yeah. Maybe that violates the stories I've told myself when I was younger that, hey, you know, I don't have much meaning, I'm not that special. And we create a cocoon of comfort around mm-hmm. that, feels sort of safe in there. But to realize, oh, we can make a difference.
Yeah,
that's so beautifully said.
Everything we do or don't do, it has meaning. The only question is, do you have the awareness of mm-hmm. what it is? And by the way, we're humans. How could we possibly have full awareness of right. what it is?
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
That's so beautifully said. And it's, I think, remembering that, you know, even in a dark time, we can be the light, right? Like, even in the smallest things, like, it doesn't mean you have to go out there and lead a giant protest or you know, start some huge movement. It's just like in our daily activities. It's, are you spreading fear or are you spreading love, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the little mm-hmm. things really matter. Yeah. Like, I find, you know, people like us, like, we'll make a piece of content and mm-hmm. we'll get a lot of eyeballs on it.
Yeah.
That's not where we really make the biggest difference. I think when we're holding our children, that's, we're having far more beneficial impact than when we're saying it, talking on a video mm-hmm. where maybe a million people watch it. And that's cool. That's making a difference too. Mm-hmm. Walking across the street and going out of our way to say a kind hello to someone who maybe nobody else is going to talk to them today. That to me is actually more profound and impactful than the illusion of, hey, we're reaching a lot of people, therefore those are the only ones making a lot of difference. Mm-hmm. And like Viktor Frankl's work, you just think of some of the most dire experience. And then you think of like, the Holocaust, like couldn't get any worse than that. Nothing you can do. But there's stories told of these kind people in the worst conditions I could possibly imagine. So unjust, just unthinkable. But as these, some people were starving, they would give their little bits of food to someone who was even more worse off. And you see like, wow, what a beautiful being the light mm-hmm. in the darkness, where that little act, even if nobody else saw it, no stories were told about it, they made a difference.
Yeah. They change that person's life.
It reminds
life.
Me, we just had a podcast with Justin Wren. I don't know if you know Justin.
Yeah.
Wren. Yeah. And he shared this really beautiful story of him being, you know, in Congo and working with the pygmies. And he said there was this little boy that got, you know, worked full days of work and he got paid in peanuts. And he got 15 peanuts. And Justin, you know, was sitting next to him, and this boy looked at Justin and maybe he saw him, you know, tired, suffering, exhausted. And he turned to him and he opened his hand and he put 5 or 6 peanuts into Justin's hand. And Justin was like, no. Like, this is, like, you worked all day. And it was, that story really brought so much, like, heart and tears to me, because I'm like, wow, like, you see even just little acts like that, especially in a community, like when you're looking at the pygmies in Africa and they have nothing, you're working for literally peanuts, like actual peanuts. They still like have this beautiful connection to the human spirit, being like, I'm going to share my light. You know, what can I do to give you? I have nothing, but I will give what I have. You know?
And that can feel great.
Yeah.
And just, and I think that's something, like, I always think of, try to go to the person that's like in that place of feeling purposelessness.
Yeah.
Is that a word? Feeling purposelessness.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that's really interesting, is to talk about something, just the simple things.
Yeah.
They can give you that next step and that next light, and just finding one thing to do and doing that, and then seeing, well, what's the next thing I can do?
Yeah.
And using that energy that's created can be such a, it can be a beautiful motivator mm-hmm. that allows you to eventually find, with the faith that it shall you continue to find what that purpose is for you. Because it's so easy to be like, just go do something and find your purpose. And so many people,
it's so big and abstract.
Yeah, right. And so it's like, just do something nice. That's such a good purpose.
I think that's the North Star. Just like, how can I do something nice kindness. One small give someone a peanut, as small as that, and then feeling it.
Yeah.
It's like you have to be a sociopath to do something nice and not feel good because of it, whether that lasts for a minute or an hour, like who knows, but it's beautiful. And then, yeah, what's the next nice thing? And then before too long, if we're not careful, we'll wake up and realize like, oh, I'm living on purpose.
Yeah.
I'm making a difference. I'm accidentally doing this. Crap, I was wrong.
That's amazing. And I love how you also brought, you know, your son and children as a purpose, because we can relate so deeply to that as well. You know, since having Xavian, who's only a month, you know, younger than your boy, it's brought this different sense of purpose. Like, it's not just like you're just creating content and you're building a business and all of these things. It's like, what are we doing and how are we contributing so that when we leave this world, they have something to live with, you know, and like they can walk in our steps, and we're doing everything we can to keep this world as it is and not to, you know, go to waste.
I mean, the kid coming in, it changes a lot.
It sounds like for you, like having your child has really shifted a lot in your life.
Before I had mine, you know, I'd get irritated by parents who are like, well, having a kid changes everything. I'm like, I don't see it. Like, just whatever. I don't think so. I already feel on purpose.
Yeah.
But dear God, truly that, a gift from God. And I've felt so much of my being activated and come online that didn't need to be online before. There wasn't a reason. There wasn't this other soul for me to steward and love and receive and play with and guide. And so it's like I feel so much more whole now. I also notice for myself the lens that I see the world in is very different, because, you know, I'm seeing through the prism of, oh, and my son and his future. And then I look at other people's kids, and I've always thought kids are great, but I never saw them for what they are, because now I see other people's children. I'm like, that's, my son's name is Wilder. That's someone else's Wilder. Like they are so special. They're so innocent. They're not in a place where they're creating their world yet, because they're in a place of innocence. So I just see this tenderness and vulnerability and the need for the protection, the providership, the guidance, and I see how impressionable they are, for the better or worse. So everywhere I look in the world, like, I'm like, oh, that book, like, that's a bad influence, or like, how can someone act that way? There's children around. Then seeing other positive things, like, wow, that's great for the kids. It changes everything.
Has it changed your life in terms of just like your routine and what you prioritize now?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. So my routine's changed mostly in the sense that I don't have routines anymore. You know, I do as much of them as I can, but I used to like always love the dialed in morning routine. But now often my son, like, he'll wake up before I do. He'll wake us up. And, you know, when I see my little guy on the side of the bed, you know, tapping at me, it's like, there's nothing else I'd rather do than start my day playing with my little guy. And then I bring my son into my routines. Like, one of the things I love to do, I have a cold plunge. So getting in really cold water first thing in the day. So now I'm able to involve him. Like, I don't put him in it, but like, he sits there. He loves to stick his hands in it. So I think I've streamlined a lot of things, and also gotten more unattached to things. Like, I used to think, dude, it's the end of the world if I don't get my full morning routine in. But now it's like, I like it when I can, and other times it's better not to, because something better has spontaneously come up with my little guy.
It's funny, that fluidity that they bring. Because I understand that, the morning routine aspect.
And a sense of surrender, too, because you're just surrendering to, like, okay.
My goodness, right? Like, I'll find myself on it. Like, I try. I'm like, I'm going to get up 2 hours before he'll even think of getting up. Just so I can have that little amount of time. And, you know, an hour in, I'll hear, him's coming to life and Juliana with him, and I'll just feel myself like if I'm on my mat or whatever I'm up to, I'll just rise from whatever I'm doing and sort of flow into the bedroom and lie on the bed and be like, there's nothing, like, how could I think about meditating right now? Yeah. Or like whatever it is, reading a book, or like, you know, when I could just be there with him and be like, be present. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that, I don't know. It's so funny because I was the same way about kids and about parenting and everyone. There's a lot of things people said, I think, about parenting that weren't necessarily true the way we've handled it. But there was some things that when they said it changes everything, it's like a switch. It's like all the weird ways that we were like fatherhood. It's the biggest thing in the world. And I'd be like, no, I don't know. Same thing, skeptical. But I think the nature of skepticism is nice.
Sure.
And maybe that made it even more like of a beautiful spring to bathe in. Because I'm just like, as soon as I let my skepticism guide me to the place of love, it was such like, I don't know, life is just, it's everything now. He's like, and it's not that it's like it's all around him, but the dynamic
the
of
nucleus.
The purpose of like nucleus, what we do now, it's like anything I'm doing, if it doesn't reach a level of like of something that it, I find is more valuable then it's like, why the fuck would I do this?
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. I do. Same for me.
Yeah.
There's so many more no's now. Even like my work, I used to like, hey, if I'm awake and if I'm not exercising or doing something self-growthy or spending time with my wife, I'm going to be working. And now I've found, I guess the word balance, where there's a lot of work I normally would do that I don't do. It's like I cut that out because... Mm-hmm. Spending hours with my son is that important. So
interesting.
Yeah. We just recalibrate. Mm-hmm. Oh, what are the priorities? Yeah.
And when I do engage, I actually find myself more focused.
Yes.
And more dialed in. And I'm just like, whoa, look how much I accomplished.
Yeah.
So it's like this extra, like it's like a superpower on one end to say no, which is a huge superpower. And then on the other hand, when it's a yes, it's like, no, I'm fully in. Like, and this, if I'm going to spend the next 6 hours doing this or come to Austin, we're going to shoot podcasts and all this stuff. It's like, we're going to go hard. We're going to make sure it matters when we're away from him. Yeah. And it's cool. Like, I don't know. It
adds so much more potency.
Yeah.
Like whatever you do, you know, this is going to matter. If it doesn't, it's not worth taking time away from the little one.
Exactly. Or the family. Yeah. We see that a lot. Cause in Costa Rica, we have a nanny that we have come in, you know, when we have to go to work, and we always like, we get in the car with Mark, we have a co-working space. We go and do a lot of the computer working stuff. And we always make sure like, okay, is the work we're going to go do right now? It like, we can't just sit around and like kind of get distracted by social media and things like that. Like if we're going to go and another stranger person is going to be with our son, we better make sure that the work we're doing is actually going to be meaningful, impactful, and doing something for his future rather than just kind of, you know, whatever.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting how even just that, it shifts the way we live our life in a beautiful way, in a positive way. It makes us more focused, but also more balanced in a way of finding that life, work, balance, family, you know what I mean? That whole dynamic is more balanced.
And it empowers... It empowers this really interesting side of consciousness that like of cultural consciousness. And you mentioned it earlier, and it's funny because I think about like, I was very politically motivated as a teenager. Like I was in a political punk band and I was on the fringe of all ideas. And actually when I look back at it, we adopted like weird wokeism like very early when it was like written in political things
weird
in university. Yeah, like we would stop writing women as W-O-M-E-N. This is like 1997. It would be W-O-M-I-N, equality. Like it was just like, we've done our thing. Like it was really intense.
Yeah.
And like, I was pretty serious about that. And eventually figured out a few different ways of looking through the prism to understand all those kinds of ideas from a different perspective. But all of that, like in leading through life and meeting Juliana and everything like that. And now we have this baby and the things that are going on in the world, like it really makes it that much more purposeful to speak and that much more purposeful to understand. I think understand first is better because to really dive in and say like, if I'm going to make an opinion about this and again, not own that opinion, but just to shape the way I feel about it. Having him at the side, whispering like, you know, where you stand on this, that defines our, like the relationship to him and how I'm going to feel about, you know, I don't know, like the gender ideology now. Like, honestly, 10 years ago, I don't know where I would have landed. Yeah. And we all evolve. But now I'm pretty sure I'm very passionate about protecting my son.
Yeah.
And knowing that he's free to do whatever he needs to do. But outside influence, like to young minds at certain ages, like it really, like there's something there that I don't think would have been there 2.5 years ago.
I feel the same. Same timeline for me. 2.5 years ago, I looked at taking the gender ideology for example. I looked at it very differently. It's like, oh, I just see people choosing to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And I would, even then, I'd look at it like, you know, just because you think you're something doesn't mean you are. But like, dude, express yourself that mm-hmm. way. Yeah. And you're free to even think you're something that yeah. you're not, even if you're not that thing. But now, I look at the outside influences and the father, warrior, protector in me sees the intentional dismantling of the indoctrinations to purposely get a child to see themselves in a way that they're not. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's a distinction supporting someone who's in that space versus indoctrinating people to be in that space.
Right.
And we know how impressionable children are. Pretty much 100% of them think there's someone at the North Pole bringing them toys. They're very impressionable. Yeah. So, yeah, I look at the gender ideology. I look at, you know, social issues where before, you know, before I had mine, I'd hear people talk about, well, you know, fathers leaving families or it's called crime and like that's a big deal. And I'd be like, well, I don't really get it. You know, if the parents weren't happy together, of course they should split apart. But now I see, oh, how much a child is influenced by their nuclear family. Mm. Like that is the cell that creates the body of humanity. And I just think like if I ignored my son, let alone left home and didn't really come back, but if I ignore him for 5 minutes, I see the pain that registers in him. So I don't ignore him for 5 minutes anymore. If it's 30 seconds before he gets my attention, I even see the pain that registers on him. And then you just have to think that's scarring his psyche. Mm-hmm. So anyway, now I'm so passionate about like nuclear families, like, guys, that makes a tremendous difference. Yeah. If we want a better future, a better society for our world, we have to treat our children as though they're the precious, impressionable little people that they are.
Yes, impressionable. Santa.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, it's...
That's enough to say. You know what Santa? I mean? Like, they believe in Santa Claus. So, if, like, what are we putting in front of their eyes? Because kids are curious.
Yeah.
Right? Like...
And preserving them. They're so innocent. It's interesting. Yeah. It's a wild time for that kind of thing. And I think, in a way, having a child in this time, I'm very grateful for. Because it's given an extra dynamic to look at it all.
Yeah. And also awakening, like you said, that like warrior spirit in you being like, no, we have to protect.
Yeah.
Like, I will not let this influence my child's life, you know? And so
still preserving the freedom of everybody else. And I think that's the nuance that is lost in a lot of it. It's like, we're not...
Yeah.
Like barbarically protecting our family and saying like, you all must behave in a way so my child is safe. It's like, that's nonsense.
No, totally, and we're the tyrant.
And exactly. It's this weird, like, no, that's what you're doing. It's like, no, we're actually not. Like, we're just saying, do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Just don't bring it
in front of them. It's like, don't, and indoctrinate such an aggressive word, but it's almost accurate when it comes to a child. Yeah. Because if you start putting these things in front of them, then like anything that was put in front of me as a kid, I remember. It was like, I remember seeing a kid with buck teeth and being like, I wish I had buck teeth. Being like, I wonder if I could, ask him, can I, like, because it was just different and cool. And like,
I remember first time I saw a person with a black eye, I thought, I want a black eye too. I felt like that'll get me attention. People feel sorry for me.
It's weird because I thought I was, same thing. Honestly, fat lip. I honestly think I might have punched myself in the lip, being like,
I was hitting my eye with a baseball that night. Couldn't, I guess, didn't do it hard enough to get a black eye.
Totally didn't. Oh. Just couldn't commit. That's so funny. And that's the thing. When I was a kid, I was like, anything I'd see, I would gravitate towards. I'd be like, because, and again, it's funny. Even just to hear you say it, I'm like, it frees me to say it. Because I did. I wanted attention to be different. Braces. I wanted braces.
Yeah, me too.
You'd see the one kid in the class with braces, and I'd be like, why do they get those shiny braces that make them so unique? And so it's like, so anything put in front of a kid that's different and unique and they can identify with or find a sense of community in or sense of belong, anything like that. It's like, maybe we should be a little mindful of what we're putting in front of them.
For sure.
I don't know.
Especially when their sense of reality constantly changes, right? And that's the thing. It's like, I believe when children get to a certain age, of course, they should have the right to choose whatever they want to do. But until they come to that knowing and that awareness, like, we just need to protect them a little bit, you know?
And that's respecting the appropriate unfolding of the child as they mature. Yeah. Like, we have children under 2 years of age. Mm-hmm. We need to intervene a lot. That is very appropriate. Mm-hmm. If we're still doing that when they're 20, that's very inappropriate. Mm-hmm. But it's like if one of our children wandered out into the street, I'm not going to respect that choice. Oh, he identifies as being in the street right now. He just wants to. No, that's not okay. I, as the parent, I'm entrusted to protect him from himself and what he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And then I think our challenge as caring, protective parents is gradually relinquish that as they grow, and hopefully we can be semi-graceful with it. Yeah. I'm sure I'll screw that up plenty of times and we'll get backlash. Dad, you're being overbearing. I'm like, yeah, probably, but feels better this way to me.
Yeah.
Let me smother you.
Just a little bit longer.
You might be 17, but come sit on my lap. I don't know.
It's funny. I actually have visions of that anytime. Like I see Xavier and I'm like, you know what? It's one of those things. I'm just going to spend a little longer time in bed with him because we co-sleep, and I just like cuddle him because I know that, like, you know what, in 10 years you're gonna be like, mom, go away. You're gonna be pushing me away. It's like, you have such a finite time.
10 years, he's already got his no routine.
That's true. He already goes bye-bye anytime
and pushes mom away, and she's like, this is my future.
He's not even two yet, so it's like, bye-bye, we have to like cherish these moments when we still have them and like squish them, because you know they're gonna blossom into their own little beings and have their own ways they want to live their life, and that's beautiful. But like you're saying, but right now it's a time that like we can, you know, cuddle them and protect them, and we should.
Yeah, and that gets exchanged for their own sovereignty, and they start actively participating in their hero's journey.
Yeah,
they've got to make their choices, and we won't agree with all of them. Yeah. Some of them, I'm sure, are destined to help them lose themselves, which is necessary for them to hopefully then find themselves in their own way. But it's sovereignty, parental protection. I think there's the inverse relationship of that as we go along.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
Beautifully said.
What about homeschooling?
Yeah.
Are you guys
going to educate our son? I feel as though keeping him illiterate will protect him from any level of indoctrination, right?
That's
just
a choice.
For your truth within, son.
That is the opposite. Oh,
well, there's this whole like movement of unschooling, right? I'm not sure much about it. Yeah.
But how are you going to, just because I'm so curious, because we're obviously thinking about it a lot. And then Heidi today brings up this thing that homeschooling is sometimes
put in the same bucket.
With anti-vaccination.
Yeah, they're like,
it was also on your Wikipedia.
Promoting homeschooling. It's like, that seems okay to me. Like, you know, like, so I'm curious, what are your plans for, like, do you have plans for Wilder?
Yeah, so the plan isn't hard and definite yet.
Ours either.
But when we look at what public schools have unfortunately become in the U.S., we know that's not an option for him. So what we're considering, homeschooling being one, Waldorf, Montessori type schools. Yeah. And then I'll tell you, out where we live, there are amazing options where these change makers, like several schools popped up because these people had their kids in even Waldorf schools. Mm-hmm. And those schools in spring 2020 said, we're going to mask your kids. And they said, no, we're not. Mm. And they said, well, if you want them to go to school here, they're going to be masked. And they said, we'll start our own school. Wow. So they have these conglomeration of like best of different types of schools. So we have several of those amazing options to consider.
That's awesome.
Homeschooling being one of them. I personally, I like the social element.
For sure.
My son, right now, he's an only kid. I'm ready for another. Mm-hmm. My wife has to have a say in that, too.
I relate to that position.
But I don't think homeschooling's the top of my list because I really value him being more social, having exposure to that. But homeschooling is certainly something we consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How y'all are looking at it.
Very, very similarly to you guys. Sure. I think the socialization aspect is really, really important, especially like right now for us, we're traveling, we're doing so much. He is like, my mom's here with us taking care of him when we're shooting, but he's always around adults.
Yeah.
And he loves kids because in Costa Rica, the nanny we would have, she'd take him to the beach and he'd socialize with like other nannies and kids. And like, we just see he's such a social child. So for us, actually, if we end up, spending more time in Costa Rica, there is like a Waldorf school there. Mm-hmm. There's a new childcare kind of yurt school up. It's like a yurt in the middle of nowhere, but it's Waldorf inspired. So it's really like connected with nature. Mm-hmm. So we are kind of looking in a similar way, like maybe homeschool, but also just because we want
him to
be around other children with that have like-minded parents. Maybe that's a good way to say as well, because that's really important. When they get to a certain age, it's the other parents that are really raising your child, because it's through the kids, right? So if, when you see like the community, we connect to the community, everyone in it, then we feel like we have trust that when he goes to a school like that, he'll be around good people and good values.
Mm-hmm. So. One of the schools in Costa Rica, is there a lady named Alice that runs any of those that you're aware of?
It could be Estrellas. Is it Alice that runs Estrellas?
I don't know them very well because he's too young. We haven't really gone into the whole process. But there is a school called Casa de Estrellas, which is like a Waldorf school on a beach in Osara, which really is really beautiful. Cool because they get to really be like involved with the ocean and the beach and nature, and it's beautiful. And it's beautiful, like when you go online and see what they've done, it's like these little bamboo little platforms. It's really cool.
Super,
but I don't know the names of the people that started it.
But if it's between, like, it's funny, if it's between the homeschooling or the public school, like the public school aspect of it, just looking at that, it's just like it's a hard no. And it's hard to say that and to really know that the consequence of that is taking a much more deeper conscious responsibility in making very difficult choices, like in getting very involved, where I think the public school system, it's really easy to be like, oh, off to school, but I think like that's why for us it is, I was so keen to ask, just because it's this journey of unraveling and hearing and resonating with what you're saying, or and trying to just perceive through others that are sort of like-minded in the parental journey to navigate the way, because we know we're going to make mistakes. I mean, as humans, we make enough, like individuals. Now as parents, I'm like, oh my God, how do we mitigate our mistakes? Yeah. I don't know.
Make mistakes, not catastrophes, I think is the goal.
That's good. I like that.
Well put, for sure. But speaking of everything that you're doing right now, you're really focused on your shows right now, like your live stand-up comedy, or what's going on in your world and the next
few
months?
A good question. There's always so much going on. I guess there's two primary focuses that take up most of my attention. The weekly video production, on my YouTube channel, I'm releasing at least two comedy videos a week. Now I have another channel called JP Reacts, do 3 videos a week on that.
Wow.
And then usually 2 weekends a month, I'm on the road doing usually 5 or 6 comedy shows in different cities. Now there's like the undertaking of writing a whole bunch of new stand-up material.
Wow. Yeah.
And also I feel like filming the stand-up special, there was like a graduation of the state of mind that I was approaching the material from, where, not all, but a lot of it was around what's going on in the world. And there was just a bit of a, I would call it more of a warrior approach to the comedic material.
For sure.
And as I've kind of graduating that material into the special, I'm feeling like I'm still interested in talking about what's going on in the world, but I feel like now I'm coming from a different part of me where there's, I would call it, a newfound desire to leave people more empowered and less alienated, no matter who you are.
Beautiful.
not that I was trying to hurt people with
no, no, totally. Of course, yeah.
But I'm enjoying this new journey of like, yeah. Hey, I get to write a bunch of new stand-up material, and I feel like I'm now at a different part of my consciousness. So it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, the new channel's really funny.
Yeah.
We really like that too.
Yeah, thank you for constantly putting a smile on our faces. Oh my goodness. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always a little go-to to just lighten up the mood whenever we need it.
I like the Ryan Long one, actually, because I used to play hockey with him.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Every Sunday. And it wasn't a real league. It was like a boys league. Like, we just all show up every Sunday. Of course, boys cast. I can't believe I called that boys league for Ryan Long. My God. But it was so funny because just to watch him, like, we 7 years, we almost like 6 5 a long time of every Sunday. And I went off and we did Boho, and then I started seeing him doing his thing and like coming to his space, and it was just like, it's, I don't know, I'm always like, sometimes he goes a little far for me, but at the same time it's comedy and I like it. It's dangerous, like dangerous comedy to me is like, that's what makes me really laugh, like, oh shit, he said that. Like, he says some shit and I'm just like, anyway. So then I saw that little, like, the cross, you know, and to see that, I'm like, it's like, to me, it was like a little Marvel thing, like, you know, two characters from other sides coming together. And so whenever you interact with him or like that, it's always really special.
Well, I'm a big fan of his. Glad to have him as a friend. I think he's brilliant and amazing to hear that you guys have the history of hockey.
I got to reach out to
small
him.
Small world.
Because honestly, it's been...
He's in New York now, no?
I think so, yeah. I haven't talked to him in forever, but I'm like, I literally think I watch every video. Like, just because I'm like, way to go, Ryan.
Sometimes,
like,
they'll show it to me. He's like, watch this video.
She's not a fan.
No, it's not all the videos I'm a fan of. Sometimes he pushes it too far.
He does push it.
You're definitely not his demographic.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
No, he again, like, I don't have to agree with everything, but I can laugh at all kinds of things, you know? Yeah. And I think that laughter is such a thing that can unite. And I think, you know, that's why it's very special to us to have you here as well, too, because we see you as such like a uniter, like someone that brings people to a space and says, you know what, even though it's hard and even though it can be difficult, if we laugh, like, it makes life easier, you know? And especially when we laugh at the absurdities or even the things you're not supposed to laugh at. And that's funny, like, because in all rights, he should probably be canceled. I don't know how he's not, honestly. But, you know, he stands there and that's his truth. And God bless him for it, you know? That's his truth. It's a really beautiful thing. Yeah. Anyways.
Thank you, JP. Yeah, really, really wonderful to connect with you today.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Thank you guys for inviting me on. This first time we're meeting in person,
and
such a joy to spend time with you guys. I mean, you guys are just open-hearted, the best people. I don't know how you've been putting up with me.
Oh, my goodness. But
this has just been an absolute highlight of my month. So thank you guys very much likewise. For having me.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
Yeah.
And I mean that as like uncheesy as I can. It's just like, it's cool like to just connect like
this. And hopefully we can connect again, you know, anytime you come back to Costa Rica or wherever background Austin, it would be wonderful.
Our boys should chill. Yeah, our boys should totally chill.
Our boys definitely have a good time playing, for sure.
He's a maniac, ours. I don't know what yours was.
Yeah, he's maniac.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh,
amazing.
All right. Well,
thank you.
Thanks, my man.
Yeah.
Appreciate y'all.
And that's a wrap.